insurrection, obstruction, indictments, civilly liable for sexual abuse. The one man responsible for all that could be sitting in a prison cell on Election Day and still be elected Commander-in-Chief for these United States. That man is beholden to Putin, weakened NATO the last time around, and is currently tying himself to wealthy Saudi oil money. He enriched himself when government stated his property. He campaigned on wanting to use government to go after his political rivals and wants to expand executive power. If Donald Trump is reelected, our nation is lost. So let's roll up our sleeves, get to work, and tell the MAGA folks no more before it's too late. Welcome back to Liberal Band Radio, Talk from the Left, That's Right. This is your host, Dan Zimmerman, coming at you from New Orleans, Louisiana. To join the conversation, it's area code 914-803-4131. That's 914-803-4131. Or you can join us in the chat rooms either liberaldanradio.com, which is the YouTube channel, or go to twitch.tv/liberaldanradio, which is the Twitch channel. If you're listening currently on Blog Talk Radio, we pretty much just use that as a soundboard and audio device. So come on over to the YouTube side if you want to participate. And if you're going to call in, please leave your first name and area code in the chat so I can know who you are when I go to you. So we can do a little bit of call screening as well. Sports show as always. Please remember to like the video on YouTube. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, share videos, comment on videos, etc. Get the algorithms up. You can also become a member, Liberal Danimal, becoming a member on YouTube for as little as $2 a month. And also you can follow me over on Twitch and subscribe for free with Amazon Prime, or you can subscribe as normally and you can give subscriptions or memberships as appropriate on either of those platforms as well. You can go to liberaldan.com and click the Buy Me a Cider button, or go to buymeacoffee.com/liberaldanradio. Venmo, Liberal Dan, do it friends and family as well. We got 12 viewers on YouTube, but only 6 likes, so please make sure to smash that like button. Also, I think that's about it. We've got several things we're going to talk about today. We talk about Super Tuesday upcoming tomorrow, and some of the events of the last weekend pertaining to the election. We're also going to be reviewing the relatively short Supreme Court ruling that came down about Colorado, and it came down 9-0, but there was still some activism, conservative activism that took place in that ruling. We will go over that as well. First and foremost, though, we do have the one person who we don't need to have giving his information on YouTube, because we all know who he is. Friend of the show, who we all know and love, Khalil. Welcome back to the show, Khalil. Thank you for calling in. What's going on? How was your weekend?
Nothing much. I'm feeling pretty good. I'm hoping that I get to go to either Richmond, Virginia, or Baltimore, Maryland sometime soon. I'm hoping like next week.
Well, I'm always partial to Baltimore, because that's where I was originally. That's where I was raised. I was raised up in Baltimore. So, if you have a crab cake, eat one. Eat one in my honor. I'll live vicariously through you.
I'll buy one in your honor. I'm originally from D.C. I don't know if you've been to D.C. or not.
I've been a couple times. Yeah.
Well, see, back in the '90s, D.C. used to represent Baltimore Orioles because they didn't have a team back then.
Right,
that?
That's true. Yeah, I mean, I remember back, because it was weird, because Baltimore didn't have a football team, so you had some Baltimore fans who would cheer on the Redskins, and then D.C. would cheer on the Orioles until D.C., the Expos, moved from Montreal and became the Nationals, and I my first memory of the Baltimore Colts was them leaving Baltimore. So, and then I left Baltimore before the Ravens got there. So I never became really a Redskins fan, but I became a Saints fan when it came down here. So I'm still an Orioles fan, but I'm a Saints fan too. Oh. So.
Yeah. And I'm hoping I can go to a Taekwondo class and watch them do some of their stuff. And what they do is they give the police and military security and jail guards free classes so they can do some de-escalation, so they can know how to defend themselves, the public, without going too far.
Right. Well, more places should do that, because unfortunately, too many officers like to escalate, and not enough people are trained in their practice of de-escalation. Because if we could had more de-escalation techniques, we'd have a lot more or a lot fewer deaths at the hands of the police, a lot fewer injuries at the hands of police, et cetera. So that is definitely a good thing to learn, and probably definitely a good thing for anybody to learn at some point. So.
Yeah, the officer I didn't like, he saw some of the posts I wrote, and basically he didn't really say anything negative to me. I guess he just took it in stride.
Uh-huh. There you go.
Officer Perkins.
So, I don't know, maybe he's learning. You never know. Sometimes they can learn new – they can change their spots, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anywho. So, any big plans for the week or?
Drawing.
Very cool.
I already drew something that had to do with politics and racism and just other things. It's a bulldozer crushing a bunch of firearms that's illegal or from criminals. Like, it's from a shotgun to a 50 cal to a Desert Eagle. It's supposed to run over the guns, and I have a BET logo on it. And the guy that's in the bulldozer, I don't know if he's a construction worker or not, but he has a hard hat on still. But basically, black people are 10 times likely to be murdered with people with guns than anything else.
Right. I mean, that sounds – I mean, and if you ever want to share any of your art on the show – I'd be more than happy to share that. Yeah, Kellahella, I'm being overly optimistic. She's laughing at my idea of the officer changing their spots, but you know, maybe once or twice in a blue moon, the exception probably proves the rule. Let's see, Cynthia from Texas. Am I crazy for voting tomorrow in the Republican primary ballot, trying to narrow the options for them in November, mainly anti-MAGA voting defensively, all blue in November? I don't think you're crazy, Cynthia. I think it's strategery, as your as the former Texas governor would have said. So someone asked a question in the chat. Did you protest with Reverend Barber? Is that correct?
He was supposed to be down there, but he didn't come for some reason, or either he came earlier and I missed him.
So he missed. Okay. Very
yeah, he
cool.
was supposed to be down there speaking.
All righty. Well, anything else to chip in before we move on to the topics? Or before we move on
no,
to Wes, since Wes is going to call in a second?
No, thank you. Thank you anyway, though.
Oh, thank you so much again. Thank you for calling in, Khalil. Glad to have you on, as always, and you have a good one. You know. If you have a good crab cake, let me know where you get it from. Next time I'll go up, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, can you put me back in the queue, because I still want to listen?
Sure, no problem. I'll put you back in the queue.
Thank you.
There you go. Everyone, that's Khalil, friend of the show. Glad to have you on. Phil Stone in the chat. I remember Johnny Unitas also really irked my dad by cheering for Joe Namath and the Jets against the Colts in the Super Bowl. Nice. Yeah, it might have been health issues that prevented him from showing up at that time. So also reminders to anybody, if you have subscribed to subscribed to the Twitch channel with your Amazon Prime, it's probably time to as I just, you know, did with my NerdyDan.com account. I subscribed with Prime. It's time to subscribe again. Just you always have to manually do it every month. It doesn't automatically pull from your account. So just make sure to go ahead and re-up it every month if you want to re-up it with me. So let's see, Jolie, are you a tool? What's the wrench? The wrench is symbolizing the fact that she is part of the mod squad, one of the fabulous helpers that join us on here on Liberal Dan Radio. Talk from left, that's right. So, oh, there's Wes. We have Wes on hold. So let's bring Wes on the show before he falls asleep for the evening. How are you doing, Wes? How have you been?
Hey, Danny, I'm good. Just well enough, I guess. I got my new tooth today.
New tooth? The whole tooth and nothing but the tooth?
Yeah, I've been waiting. I've been waiting since January of 2003.
Oh, wow. That's a long time to wait for the tooth. But eventually the tooth came out.
I lied.
2023?
The tooth was root canal, you know, and it got a crack in the root, and, you know, I never could feel a tooth before, but all of a sudden it started hurting, so they had to pull it.
Yeah, that sucks. I haven't had too many teeth problems. That's not the same thing to say for the rest of my family, but fortunately for me, my teeth have been relatively strong. I think I've only had one or two cavities in my entire life, and like never had to have any caps put on or root canals or anything, fortunately. Hey, TV2 is live in the chat, and Trucker John's live in the chat. Shouts out to both of them. Good to see y'all both.
Yeah, and Don. Steve, nobody likes you. Nobody likes Steve, right?
Oh, we love Steve. What are you talking about?
I'm just jealous.
So what else besides your new tooth? What's going on with you?
I went south. Did I tell you guys that already?
Oh my.
Yeah, I went south with a Hillary sticker on the back of my truck, and nobody said anything.
Oh, yeah. I drive around the entire south when I drive. I have a Joe Biden, but it's spelled like the New Orleans way. Instead of J-O-E, it's J-E-A-U-X, Joe Biden.
Yeah.
And so I drive all around the South. I mean, New Orleans is fairly left-leaning liberal, but everywhere else, you know, they see my, I have the Joe Biden sticker on one side of my car, and I have the feminist as fuck sticker on the other side of my car. So, I don't know. If anybody's going to pick on anybody, it's going to be me.
I have my car is from 2000. And,
nice.
And I have a Hillary sticker on it from 2000. It's still there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mine's not that old yet. Mine's just the 2013. I'm working on 11 years now for my car.
That's good though.
Yeah. The engine's not as old because the engine had to be fully replaced after a flood, but you know, maybe that's one of the reasons why it's still kicking around. So, which is good.
I have one of those flex fuel engines. They can run on 15% gasoline.
Cool.
I can run the rest on alcohol.
Hmm.
And we got plenty of alcohol where I'm from. So it's just not cost effective.
Right.
But I can use it if I have to. Yep. Anyway, I saw a panda for the first time in my life.
Very cool.
That was kind of cool. And I might have told you already, I went to the Martin Luther King stuff in Atlanta. That was really neat. And
Atlanta has a lot of good stuff. For as much as we hate on Atlanta here in New Orleans, because there are rivals in the NFL, Atlanta does have a lot of neat stuff to go check out. So,
yeah, I went and saw my MAGA uncle in Richmond. I don't care what any of the rest of you say. I love that guy more than anybody.
Hella, hella. I ran on alcohol for years. Same.
Jeff also, I'm running on mostly alcohol now. Nice. Lots of us. Liberal Dan Radio, full of alcoholics. There you go.
Alcohol has so many uses. Corn liquor, it'll do so many things.
Yes. It'll make your moon shine, right?
It sure does. Shine on, harvest moon.
Blue moon of Kentucky, keep on shining.
Yeah. We should try and sing Moon River. I wonder how much we'd sink.
Well, I don't know if I do well singing anything right now, simply because of the fact that I'm still suffering with my cough and a little bit of hoarseness, but, you know.
Oh, I'm a singer, and I haven't sung well. I haven't practiced for years.
Oh, you've sung on the show, and you sounded fine, Wes. You sounded very good, probably much better than me.
I sounded fine. No. Moon River.
I don't know if I know the lyrics to Moon River that well.
I think I do. I probably don't. I could pull a Robin Zander, though, and just make them up as I was going along. House Barks does that, too.
Nice. One of these days, I get to go see Hal in concert. This weekend was just not a good weekend. Eventually, even if I would have remembered, I probably wouldn't have been able to go. So,
yeah, we get too fixed into our routines.
Yeah. Well, this weekend was not routine, but I just had a lot of stuff going on. So, most of it spending time with my kids, which is nice. Anyway.
Oh, that's always good. Yep. They're only young for a certain amount of time. And then
that's
you look
true.
At them and you think, where did these little monsters come from?
My
and
oldest
then
will
you
be
see
able to drive.
Of them today?
My oldest
yeah.
will be able to drive this year. I'm not looking forward to that.
I know. The next couple of years are going to be hell, Danny.
Stay off the sidewalks, as they say. Ha, ha, ha. Anyway.
Hide your girls.
I don't know. He doesn't seem too interested in dating at the moment, so we'll see.
Those are the ones you got to worry about, the ones that say, I don't like girls. Yeah, and then they spend all their time with the girls.
Maybe. You never know. Anyway, well, thank you for calling in, Wes. Appreciate it. We're going to get to the next few topics, but glad to have you calling as always.
You're welcome. You take it easy, Danny. I love
you. All right. Love
show.
You, pal.
I fall asleep with it all the time.
I don't know if that's a good. I don't know if that's good or not.
That must be a good.
Liberal
thing,
Dan Radio. So boring it puts Wes to sleep.
Yeah. Okay. Good night.
Good night, man. Have a good one. All right. So that was Wes, everybody. Thank you, Wes, for calling in, bringing some fun and joy to the show. Before we talk about the Supreme Court ruling and see what exactly, I haven't done much research into it. I heard that the ruling came down. I heard it was 9-0. I heard some of the concurrence on the liberal judges says that the activist Supreme Court went a little too far. So we'll talk about that, but I haven't actually read the meat of it. So we're going to go into that in a little bit, but first, and we're probably going to go over the Super Tuesday results on Wednesday. But what's interesting going into Super Tuesday is that something interesting happened, potentially, that Nikki Haley probably needed. I don't know how much it's going to help, but the fact that she won a primary, she won the D.C. primary. Now, she only gets 19 delegates. But she got 62% of the vote, almost 63% of the vote. Donald Trump only got a 30% of the vote. Now, granted, D.C. is not a very Trump-friendly city. Frankly, surprised he got as much as 33% of the vote. But for Nikki Haley to get 19 delegates and get all of the delegates in that might tell some primary voters tomorrow that, hey, she won something. Maybe it's worth getting out there and casting a ballot for her. now? Is it going to be meaningless? Is it going to do anything to help her defeat Donald Trump? Probably not. But the best part about it is now he has a loss in his column, and that's not going to make him happy. He's already went on one unhinged rant about it, and I'm sure he's going to be on several other unhinged rants about it as well. Because he can't stand when he loses. Like, even when he wins, anything he loses, he can't stand. Like, remember back in 2016, he won the presidential election. He got the Electoral College, but he spent so much time arguing over the fact that he should have won California because of 3 million something votes or something that should have been, because he felt like he somehow was going to win California because he's a dumbass. So he can't handle any loss whatsoever. So the fact that he lost D.C. is going to be eating at him. He's going to be suffering mentally more so than normal because of it. So that in and of itself is great. But the fact that she's still showing his weaknesses and his flaws gives every little nip that she's able to take at Chip, that she's able to take out of him, every little tiny little bite that she takes from his support is help that Biden will have in the fall. Furthermore, she's also come out and said that doesn't feel like she's beholden to the pledge that she took to support him in at the end of the day, because now the RNC is now different. It's because the RNC is now a whole different animal. There's Rona Romney McDaniel or whatever her name is dropped out, is no longer going to be head of the Republican Party. Trump's trying to replace her with his daughter-in-law. So she's basically like, look, this isn't the same Republican Party. I don't feel beholden to upkeep my whatever it is that I said. And basically she was saying, all of us just said that we would support the winner just so we can get on the stage. It doesn't mean any of us were being truthful about it, which, you know, par for the course for Republicans, right? Steve in the chat. Trump had to go squeeze bottles, and not just squeeze bottle of ketchup. I'm sure he probably threw bottles of ketchup against the wall and other things as well, while confusing Joe Biden with Barack Obama. And of course, he comes out and he says, Donald Trump comes out and he says every time I say Barack Obama instead of Joe Biden, I'm doing it purposefully just to drive the liberal media crazy or whatever. And then like 5 minutes later, he comes out and he calls him just in casual conversation Obama again instead of Biden, which is what I call akin to when a guy will make, or when somebody, usually a guy, but somebody makes a comment that's like offensive, and it's like Schrodinger's offensive comment. He'll see if people find it fun, if people laugh or people don't like what he said, he'll be like, oh no, I was just kidding. I wasn't being serious. So he wasn't really kidding. He was really being serious. But when people don't agree with it and start like, that's a horrible thing for you to say. And then these people will be like, oh no, I was just joking. I wasn't really serious about it. Well, that's what Trump is doing here, is that he's getting caught mistaking he's getting Trump mistaking Joe Biden for Barack Obama because he's obsessed with Obama, and he can't find any way around it other than to say, oh, it's just me doing it purposefully. But if it's just him doing it purposefully, why is he then messing up all the other things that he messes up in his speeches? Again, because every Republican accusation is a confession. So every time Donald Trump is busy trying to call Joe Biden senile, Joe Biden, mental acuity problems or whatever, it's all because Trump has those problems and he's trying to deflect, and distract, and deflect again, and deflect some more. So, you know.
It is what it is.
Thank you, Donald. So, Kalahela, he can't talk. He has no sense of humor. And also, he says, specifically, he said when he was president, he said that he never jokes around. He doesn't kid. He doesn't kid. Like somebody asked him, are you kidding when you said this? And he said, no, I don't kid. He doesn't kid around. He doesn't joke around. And I'm just like, well, then everything you say needs to be taken seriously. If you don't joke around, if you don't kid around, then everything you say must be taken seriously. Another thing I don't understand about the whole family dynamic of the Trump family is you had the ruling that we'll talk about in a few minutes. You had the Supreme Court ruling, and they said Donald Trump can't be taken off the ballot in Colorado or any other state by the states. It has to be done by Congress or what have you. Congress is the one that has to determine who gets removed from the ballots or who is eligible or not eligible for being an insurrectionist. And we'll get a little bit more into that later, obviously. But Donald Trump Jr. said something and said, Supreme Court rules that Donald Trump can't be removed from the ballot. He's your father, dude. Why are you referring to your own father by his legal first and last name? Like, your name's Donald Trump Jr. If you just said, my dad or my father, or just, hey, the Supreme Court just says the dad can't be kicked off the ticket, we'd all understand what you're saying, because we all know who your dad is. We all know who the scumbag is that unfortunately didn't pull out. It's clear. So why are you calling your father by his name? It's weird. It's a very strange, weird family dynamic that goes on there. I don't know. Maybe it's all the cocaine, allegedly. So. There's Nerd Misha. Thank you, Nerd Misha, for joining. Nerd Misha, one of my prime subscribers over on Twitch. Let's see. Phil Stone, that was Rush Limbaugh's MO. Whenever he went too far with his audience, he would say he was kidding. Him mumbling during creepy music as well made no sense. Well, you know, that's Hair Donald. Jolie, it was funny watching my 20-plus-year-old girls using our record player for the first time. Nice. Jamie Raskin is always working on doing that, but we're going to see. We're going to read what they say, and there's a little bit of activism. And from what I've heard, from what's been reported, we'll go over it. There's activism in what was said. Cynthia from Texas, a very close-knit family. Yeah, so close that they refer to each other by their proper names and not dad, father, dad, you know, daddy. I mean, he might want Ivanka to call him daddy, but that's a whole completely other different thing that we don't necessarily want to get, you know, involved in at the moment because, ew, that's gross. Anywho, so let's go ahead and let me bring up this window. Let me go ahead and expand it and make it larger so it can be more easily seen. And alternate page will put me over to the side because you can put me in a corner, I guess. All right. Well, I've been recording this whole time. LOL. Excuse me. Again, still got the lingering cough. I can never get rid of the freaking lingering cough. Usually takes like a month or two to drop that lingering cough. Anyway. So, let's talk about this Supreme Court ruling, shall we? Donald Trump petitioner versus Norma Anderson et al. Pure Curiam. What is that? This is where we want to start off with. Pure Curiam. This is the Supreme Court saying, we don't have the balls, we don't have the guts, we don't have the integrity to tell you who wrote this, except we know it's none of the liberals that wrote this. So we just have to guess who wrote this. I was looking forward to it to be another horrible Alito ruling, but we'll see. Kellehella Hubba Bubba calls him daddy. Hilarious. So just the summary, a group of Colorado voters contends that Section 3 of the 14th Amendment of the Constitution prohibits former President Donald Trump, who seeks presidential nomination, from becoming president. The Colorado Supreme Court agreed in order to Colorado Secretary of State to exclude the former president from Republican primary ballot in the state and to disregard write-in votes that Colorado voters might cast. Former President Trump challenges that decision on several grounds because the Constitution makes Congress rather than the states responsible for enforcing Section 3 against federal office holders and candidates. We reverse. So last September, on March 5th, we know the history of it. Let's see, President Trump disrupted peaceful crowd, blah, blah, blah. One consequence of his actions, the respondents maintain, is that former President Trump is constitutionally ineligible to serve. Their theory turns on Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. Section 3 provides no person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or elector of president, vice president, or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislature or as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. The Congress may vote by a two-thirds of each house to remove such a disability. According to the respondent, Section 3 applies to the former president because after taking a presidential oath, he initially incited the breaching of the Capitol in order to retain power. They claim he is therefore not a qualified candidate, and that as a result, the Colorado Secretary of State may not place him on the ballot. After a five-day trial in the state district court found the former President Trump had engaged in insurrection within the meaning of Section 3, but nonetheless denied the respondent's petition. The court held that Section 3 did not apply because the presidency does not mention by name, Section 3 does not mention by name, is not an office under the United States, and that the president is not an officer of the United States within the meaning of that provision. In December, the Colorado Supreme Court reversed in part and affirmed in part by a 4-3 vote, reversing the district court's holding. The majority concluded that for purposes of Section 3, the presidency is an office under the United States. The court otherwise affirmed, holding that the Colorado Election Code permitted the respondent's challenge based on Section 3, that Congress need not pass implementing legislation for disqualifications in order for Section 3 to attach, that the political question doctrine did not preclude judicial review of the former President Trump's eligibility, that the district court did not abuse its discretion in admitting into evidence portions of congressional report on the events of January 6th, that the district court did not err in concluding that those events constituted an insurrection, and that former President Trump engaged in that insurrection, and that former President Trump's speech to the crowd that breached the Capitol was not protected by the First Amendment. Colorado Supreme Court accordingly ordered Secretary Griswold to not list President Trump's name on the primary ballot or count any write-ins cast for him. Chief Justice Boatwright and Justices Samore and Burton Cotter each filed dissenting opinions under the terms of the opinion of the Supreme Court. The ruling was automatically a stayed pending this court's review. We granted the former President Trump's petition for certiorari, which raised a single question. Did the Colorado Supreme Court err in ordering President Trump excluded from the ballot? Concluding that it did, we now reverse. Dun, dun, dun. So, proposed by Congress in 1866 and ratified by 1868, the 14th Amendment expanded federal power at the expense of state autonomy and thus fundamentally altered the balance of state and federal power struck by the Constitution. Okay, I mean, I would expect a conservative to write that. Section 1 of the amendment, for instance, bars the state from depriving any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, denying any person equal protection of the law, and Section 5 confers on Congress the power to enforce those prohibitions along with other provisions of the amendment by appropriate legislation. Section 3 of the amendment likewise restricts state autonomy, but through different means. It was designed to help ensure enduring union by preventing former Confederates from returning to power in the aftermath of the Civil War. Statement of Rep. Stevens warning that without appropriate constitutional reforms, yelling secessionists and hissing copperheads would take seats in the House. Statement of Senator Howard lamenting prospect of a state legislature made up entirely of disloyal elements absent a disqualification provision. Section 3 aimed to prevent such a resurgence by barring from office those who, having once taken an oath of office to support the Constitution, afterward went into rebellion against the government. Section 3 works by imposing on certain individuals a preventive and severe penalty, disqualification from holding a wide array of offices, rather than by granting rights to all. It is therefore necessary, as Chief Justice Chase concluded, and the Colorado Supreme Court itself recognized, to ascertain what particular individuals are embraced by the provision. Chase wanted to explain that to accomplish this ascertainment and ensure effective results, proceedings, evidence, decisions, and enforcements, more or less formal, are indispensable. For its part, the Colorado Supreme Court also concluded that there must be some sort of determination that Section 3 applies to a particular person before the disqualification holds meaning. Constitution empowers Congress to prescribe how those determinations should be made. Does it? We'll get into that. The relevant provisions of Section 5, which enables Congress, subject to the course of judicial review, to pass appropriate legislation to enforce the 14th Amendment, or as Senator Howard put it at the time of the amendment, Section 5 casts upon Congress the reasonability of seeing to it for the future that all sections of the amendment are carried out in good faith. Now, Section 3 specifically states that Congress can take away the impediment, right? So we'll go into this Section 5 of it, but Section 3 says, gives Congress the ability to, with a two-thirds vote, to take away the impediment. Congress's Section 5 power is critical when it comes to Section 3. Indeed, during a beta enforcement legislation less than a year after ratification, Senator Trumbull noted that notwithstanding hundreds of men were holding office in violation of his terms, the Constitution, Trumbull noted, provided no means for enforcing the disqualification necessitating a bill to give effect to the fundamental law embracing the Constitution. The enforcement mechanism Trumbull championed was later enacted as part of the Enforcement Act of 1870, pursuant to the power conferred with the Fifth of the 14th Amendments. This case raises the questions whether the states, in addition to Congress, may also enforce Section 3. We conclude that states may disqualify persons holding or attempting to hold state office, but states have no power under the Constitution to enforce Section 3 with respect to federal offices, especially the presidency. Now, why? I'm sure they might try and explain why, but if they're going to argue that Section 5 of the 14th Amendment doesn't makes it so that Congress has to pass the law in order for somebody to be barred, let alone ignoring the fact that the Section 3 says that Congress only has to do something to undo the barring, then how can a state then in any way have any authority to do anything if it's Congress that has to be the one that proposes laws to enforce any part of the 14th Amendment? So right then and there, they've contradicted themselves. Not surprising, because it's an activist conservative Supreme Court. In our federal system, the national government possesses only limited powers. The states and the people retain the remainder. Among those retained powers is the power of the state to process its own governance. In particular, the states enjoy sovereign power to prescribe the qualifications of their own officers and the manner of their election, free from external interference, except for the fact that the Constitution specifically states that you cannot serve a state office if you participated in insurrection or rebellion against the federal government, or if you gave aid and comfort to those people who did so. So clearly, the 14th Amendment, while stripping away powers of the states in the first part of the section of the 14th Amendment, by requiring that the states can't deny life, liberty, or property, by saying that they have to guarantee equal protection under the law, due process to individuals, right? All of that applies. And yes, the Congress can make laws to make sure that the states aren't, you know, denying people those rights, i.e. that's why we have hate crime legislation. That's how the federal government was able to come in and prosecute the individuals who murdered the civil rights workers in Philadelphia, Mississippi, who were murdered because Mississippi wouldn't do anything about it. So the federal government came in using the legislation that was passed under the Civil Rights Act to basically say, hey, this is a violation. These people's civil rights were violated, so therefore we're going to charge you with the federal law because the state has no longer protected you because you're supposed to have protection or equal protection under the law. So although the 14th Amendment restricts state power, nothing in it plainly withdraws from the states the traditional authority, except for the fact that it clearly states that people have the authority that Congress, only Congress, can undo the ability of somebody who has had an insurrection. Only Congress can pass a law that could undo the prohibition of somebody who has committed an act of insurrection against the country. So a state cannot undo somebody's authority, somebody's prohibition, so to speak, right? That's plain language. They're manufacturing language out of the air, which is why we're calling this an activist conservative Supreme Court. After this ratification, the 14th Amendment states use this authority to disqualify state officers in accordance with state statutes. But should they have been able to appeal to tradition is a logical fallacy. It is not a reasonable argument to make. Just because they did something doesn't mean they did it right. Such power over governance, however, does not extend to federal office holders and candidates because federal officers owe their existence and functions to the united voice of the whole, not of the portion of the people. No, the federal office holders, i.e. Congress people, owe their offices to the whole of the people who elected them, which come from those specific states. So only people from Colorado are electing people from Colorado. So if you're a congressperson from Colorado, you're only being elected from Colorado. If you're a senator from Colorado, you're only being elected from Colorado. And the people who are electors, who are going to the Electoral College to vote for President Trump or for President Biden, or any other presidential candidate, I guess it's out there, that they're voted for to go vote for in the Electoral College, they're all from Colorado. They're all elected representatives from Colorado. Because remember, it's not the people who choose the president. The people choose the electors. The elector chooses the president. But I guess the Electoral College is inconvenient to them in this argument. Such power over governance, however, does not extend to federal officers or candidates because federal officers are older than existence, blah, blah, blah. Nothing in the Constitution delegates to the states any power to enforce Section 3 against federal officers or candidates. But you're making the argument that they're making the argument that only Congress can do it, but they've just then made the argument that the states can do it for state office holders when the amendment is clear that state office holders are prohibited from running if they're insurrectionists. So that would mean that the federal government would have to have all the power if you're going to go by your logic, by written whoever wrote this majority opinion. I would, again, bet dollars to donuts that this was Alito. This had to be Alito. No way that this wasn't Alito. As an initial matter, it does not even the respondents contend that the Constitution authorizes states to somehow remove sitting federal office holders who may be violating Section 3. Such a power would flout the principle of the constitutional guarantees, the entire independence of the general government from any control of representative states. Indeed, consistent with the principle, states lack even the lesser powers to issue writs of mandamus against federal officials or to grant habeas corpus relief to persons in federal custody. That has the ability to not grant habeas corpus to people in federal custody has nothing to do with this. Why this is being brought up here is absurd, and another reason why I'm fairly certain that this is written by Alito, because this is already a terrible ruling. The respondents on the list maintain that states may enforce Section 3 against candidates for federal office, but the text of the 14th Amendment on its face does not affirmatively delegate such a power to the states. The terms of the amendment speak only to enforcement by Congress, which enjoins power to enforce the amendment through legislation pursuant to Section 5. And I'd buy that. I would buy that argument that Section 5 requires that Congress could enact legislation to enforce it, but because you're now saying that the states can prohibit their own insurrectionists on their own based off of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, then you've just contradicted yourself. So we're not any clearer as to what the meaning is if you're going to hold on to the position that these states can use the insurrection clause of the 14th Amendment to ban state office holders while stating that only Congress can do it because of Section 5. It doesn't make any sense, Alito, and I'm standing firm that this was written by Alito. Maybe he was just embarrassed after having written so many other bad rulings that he didn't want to put his name on this bad ruling as well. This can hardly come as a surprise given that the substantive provisions of the amendment embody significant limitations on state authority. Under the amendment, states cannot abridge privileges or immunities, deprive persons of life, liberty, or property without due process. But he had due process. There was a trial. There was a court case, and the court said you can't be on the ballot. Denied equal protection or denied male inhabitants the right to vote without thereby suffering reduced representation in the House. On the other hand, the 14th Amendment grants new power to Congress to enforce the provisions of the amendment against the states. It would be incongruous to read that the particular amendment is granting states the power silently nonetheless to disqualify a candidate from federal office. So, no. So Congress can pass laws to restrict the states from violating the 14th Amendment. That doesn't necessarily mean that the states don't have the authority to yeet people from the ballot if they are insurrectionists. But again, if you're going to take the stance that the Supreme Court took, that only Congress has the ability to do it, you can't then say, except for state elections. It has to be all or nothing. You either have to say only Congress can prescribe the means in which office holders are prohibited from the ballot as insurrectionists, regardless of its state or federal, or states can do it. It's not states can do it under some circumstances, but not under others. Because again, the states are responsible for their own elections, so states are responsible. It's the same thing for gerrymandering. You can't argue that gerrymandering is not something that you're going to get involved with because it's up to the states to deal with. Yet with gerrymandering, you're denying the ability of the people to have equal protection under the law because you're denying them the power of the vote by restricting the power of their votes by shoving minorities, for example, into districts that do not allow them to have as much say as the other people in their state. And if somebody's calling, I see if somebody's calling, I don't see my screen. I don't see the call screen right now, so we're not taking calls at the moment. The only other plausible constitutional sources of such delegation are the elections and electors clauses, which authorize states to conduct and regulate congressional and presidential elections, respectively. But there's little reason to think that these clauses implicitly authorize the states to enforce Section 3 against federal and office holders or candidates. Well, I mean, look. If a state can decide to gerrymander their congressional districts and then award electors via those gerrymandered congressional districts, then why wouldn't a state be able to then enforce Section 3? If states have on federal candidates for federal office who are representing that state, but they can do it for the state office holders. It makes no logical sense. There's no logical sense here. The Texas Section 3 enforces these conclusions. Its final sentence empowers Congress to remove the disability by a two-thirds vote of each house. The text imposes no limits on that power. Congress may exercise at any time at the respondents concede. Yes, Congress can, with a two-thirds vote of each house, remove the inability of somebody to run for office by a two-thirds vote of each house. That doesn't make, and that doesn't mean anything about who is ineligible from the get-go. If you're an insurrectionist, you're an insurrectionist, regardless of whether or not. Insurrectionists can't run for office, period. That's the end of the story. If you're an insurrectionist, if you committed an act of insurrection, which it was ruled that Donald Trump did, and the Supreme Court of Colorado confirmed that, then you can't be on the ballot. See, in fact, historically, Congress sometimes exercised this amnesty power post-election to ensure that some of its people's chosen candidates would take office. But if states were free to enforce Section 3 by barring candidates from running in the first place, Congress would be forced to exercise its disability removal power before voting begins if it wished for its decision to have any effect on the current election cycle. Oh, boo-hoo. Then force them to do it. Just because, so you're crying because Congress has to put in extra work? Oh, no. Again, it's an illogical argument, which is why I'm sure this is written by Alito. Perhaps a state may burden congressional authority in such a way when it exercises its exclusive sovereign power over its own state offices. Again, yeah. So if somebody wants to run for state office and a state goes, this person's an insurrectionist, he can't run for governor. Only Congress has the authority to remove that. So Congress would have to act before the election to remove that inability to run for office. So if you're going to cry about it on the state, on the federal level, you need to cry about it at the state level too. It doesn't make any sense. This ruling is not consistent. But it is implausible to suppose that the Constitution affirmatively delegated to the states the authority to impose such a burden on congressional power with respect to candidates for federal office. Why? Just because you say it doesn't mean it's true. States have no power to retard, impede, burden, or in any manner control the operations of the constitutional laws enacted by Congress. But this isn't them enacting the Constitution. This has nothing to do with constitutional laws enacted by Congress. This isn't a law enacted by Congress. This is the Constitution in and of itself. Constitution in and of itself says, you're an insurrectionist, you can't serve. Done. Period. Nor have the respondents identified any tradition of state enforcement of sections. Yep, there you go. They haven't recognized a tradition. Who does appeals to tradition? A lot in their rulings. Sam Alito. Again, this is another proof in the pudding that Sam Alito wrote this damn ruling, that he didn't have the guts to attach his name to it. Nor have the respondents identified any tradition of saying enforces Section 3 against federal officers for candidates in years following ratification. Just because it didn't happen doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Appeal to tradition is a logical fallacy. Such a lack of historical precedent is generally a telling indication of a severe constitutional problem with the asserted power. It is an especially telling sign here because, as noted, states did disqualify persons from holding state offices following ratification of the 14th Amendment, which means they're able to do so. And nobody challenged the state's ability to do so. So states have the authority to disqualify people from the ballot if they are insurrectionists. Done. So there's your tradition. If you want to make your appeal to tradition, there's your tradition that states have the authority. That pattern of disqualification restricts the state, but not federal offices, provides persuasive evidence of a general understanding that states lack the enforcement power with respect to the latter. No, that's stupid. Instead, it is Congress that has long given effect to Section 3 with respect to would-be or existing federal office holders shortly after ratification, Congress enacted the Enforcement Act of 1870. That act authorized federal district attorneys to bring civil actions in federal court to remove anyone holding non-legislative office, federal state. So remove anybody, not to prohibit anybody, to remove anybody holding non-legislative offices, federal or state. So yes, you can. They made the law for non-legislative office holders because that's the only way you could do it. You can't. A state has no ability to remove a non-legislative office holder because the state doesn't control how those office holders are picked. So again, these people, these non-legislative office holders, have nothing to do with elections to Congress or elections to the presidency. Why? Because the people who are non-legislative office holders aren't picked by the voters. So therefore, the states have no ability to control how federal ones are selected. But states do have the authority to control how office holders are selected within their states. They run the elections, and that's a tradition that has been a tale as old as time. In the years following ratification, House and Senate exercised unique powers under Article 1 to adjudicate challenges, contending that certain prospective or sitting members could not take retained seats due to Section 3, and the Confiscation Act of 1962, which predated Section 3, effectively provided an additional procedure for enforcing disqualification. Well, why are you bringing up the Confiscation Act if it has nothing to do with Section 3? Nothing to do with the Section 3 that we're talking about. It has no place in the ruling, Alito. That law made engaging in insurrection or rebellion, among other acts, a federal crime punishable by disqualification from holding office under the United States. A successor to those provisions remains on the books today. Moreover, permitting state enforcement of Section 3 against federal office holders and candidates would raise serious questions about the scope of that power. Section 5 limits congressional legislation enforcing Section 3 because Section 5 is strictly remedial. To comply with that limitation, Congress must tailor its legislative scheme to remedying or preventing the specific conduct the relevant prohibition prohibits. Section 3, unlike other provisions in the 14th Amendment, prescribes conduct of individuals. It bars persons from holding office after taking a qualifying oath and then engaging in insurrection or rebellion, nothing more. Any congressional legislation enforcing Section 3 must, like the Enforcement Act of 1870, reflect congruence and proportionality between preventing or remedying that conduct and the means adopted to that end. Neither we nor the respondents are aware of any other legislation by Congress to enforce Section 3. And that would be fine if they just left it there, honestly. I would buy the argument if not for the fact that they're saying, except the states can do it for the state-run people. States can bar people from running from office based on Section 3, but not for people running from their states for federal office. It doesn't make any sense. Any state enforcing Section 3 against federal office holder candidates that were not derived from Section 5, which confers power only to Congress, as a result, such states support monopoly sweep more broadly than congressional enforcement could under our precedents. But the notion that the Constitution grants the states freer reign than Congress to decide how Section 3 should be enforced with respect to federal offices is simply impossible. But then it shouldn't apply to state offices either. Because if only Congress has the authority to undo the prohibition of an individual who has committed an act of insurrection, then the state has no say in it by their arguments. But again, their arguments are fallacious at their core. Finally, the state enforcement of Section 3 with respect to the presidency would raise heightened concerns in the context of a presidential election. State-imposed restrictions implicate a uniquely important national interest, but state-by-state resolution of the question of whether Section 3 bars a particular candidate for president from serving would be quite unlikely to yield a uniform answer consistent with the basic principle that the president represents all the voters in the nation. The president represents the electors who elect him, and the states are in charge of the process in which those electors are selected. Conflicting state outcomes concerning the same candidate could result not just from differing views of the merits, but from the variations of state law governing the proceedings that are necessary to make Section 3 disqualification determinations. Some might allow Section 3 challenge to succeed based on a preponderance of the evidence, while others might require a heightened showing. Okay, but states are responsible for having their own elections. You know what the answer is? Don't insurrect. Don't commit acts of insurrection or treason against the country, and you won't have to worry about it. Certain evidence, like congressional report on which the lower courts relied here, might be admissible in some states, but admissible in hearsay in others. Disqualification might be possible only through criminal prosecution as opposed to expedited civil proceedings in particular states. Indeed, in some states, unlike Colorado or Maine, where the Secretary of State recently issued an order excluding the former president from the ballot, procedures for excluding an ineligible candidate from the ballot may not exist at all. The result could well be that a single candidate would be declared ineligible in some states, but not others, based on the same conduct and perhaps even the same factual record. Okay, so either then Congress, under the 14th Amendment, has the ability to say, okay, we're just going to take the inability of this person to run from office away from this person so that person can be on all the ballots, thus preventing the states from banning any of this individual person from running for office, right? That's the power that was granted to the federal government by Section 3. The patchwork wouldn't exist if you didn't commit an act of insurrection against the country. And just because some states are willing to be apologists for an insurrectionist, that doesn't make it okay to force other states to not remove insurrectionists from the ballot. And even if you wanted to agree that the state shouldn't be able to do it for the presidency, it still doesn't mean that they shouldn't be able to do it for the congressional and senatorial office holders. Because again, the states run those elections. And that wouldn't have any patchwork because that would only be specific to those states. The patchwork that would be the likely result from state enforcement would sever the direct link that the framers found so critical between the national government and the people of the United States as a whole. The founders didn't have such a great history on what the people and the power of the people would have. But in a presidential election, the impact of the votes cast in each state affected by the votes cast, or in this case, the votes not allowed to be cast for various candidates in other states, an evolving electoral map could dramatically change the behavior of voters, parties, and states across the country in different ways and at different times. This disruption would all the more be all the more acute and could nullify the votes of millions and change the election result. Well, that's what the Electoral College does. It nullifies the votes of millions by creating like 5 to 10 states actually, you know, in play, and the rest of them aren't. My vote counts for shit in the Electoral College. So our founding fathers created a system where only a few states matter. So this argument, again, is specious at best. Section 3 enforcement were attempted after the nation has voted. Nothing in the Constitution requires that we endure such chaos, arriving at any time for different times up until perhaps beyond the inauguration. Well, if you're inaugurated, the only way you can remove a sitting president from the inauguration is to impeach. Now, granted, if you impeach, you have a two-thirds vote in both houses that's willing to say you're not qualified for the office. You also have a two-thirds vote in both houses to impeach somebody in the House and to convict on articles of impeachment in the Senate. So the two-thirds thing is not really relevant there because you could just impeach and remove and boom, there you go, you're done. For the reasons giving responsibility for enforcing Section 3 against federal office holders and candidates rests with Congress and not the states. The judgment of Colorado Supreme Court is therefore cannot stand. All 9 members of the court agree with the result. Our colleagues running separately further agree with many of the reasons this opinion provides for reaching it. See post part 1, joining Sotomayor, Kagan, and Jackson, and see post page 1, opinion of Barrett. So far as we can tell, they object only to our taking into account the distinctive way Section 3 works and that the fact that these Section 5 vests in Congress the power to enforce it. These are not the only reasons the state lacks the power to enforce the particular constitutional provisions with respect to federal offices, but they are important ones, and it is not the combination of all the reasons set forth in this opinion, not as some of our colleagues would have it, just one particular rationale that resolves this case. In our view, each of these reasons is necessary to provide a complete explanation for the judgment the court unanimously reaches. The judgment of the Colorado Supreme Court is reversed. The mandate shall issue forthwith. It is so ordered. So there you go. That's the horrible ruling that is, I am still saying, that is written by Alito, because it is a terribly written ruling. Maybe not the worst one he's written, but it's horribly written. So let's see what Justice Barrett has to say. She concurs in part, and concurring in the judgment. I join parts one and two of the court's opinion. I agree that states lack the power to enforce Section 3 against presidential candidates. That principle is sufficient to resolve this case. I would decide no more than that. The suit was brought by Colorado voters under state law and state court. It does not require us to address the complicated question whether federal legislation is the exclusive vehicle through which Section 3 can be enforced. The majority's choice of a different path leaves the remaining justices with a choice of how to respond. In my judgment, this is not the time to amplify disagreement with stridency. The court has settled a politically charged issue in the volatile season of a presidential election. Particularly in this circumstance, writings on the court should turn the national temperature down, not up. For present purposes, our differences are far less important than our unanimity. All nine justices agree on the outcome of this case. That is the messages Americans should take home. So not a very expansive thing written by Barrett, but, you know, at least it doesn't make the arguments that one I'm assuming is Alito made, which is that, you know, there only the Congress can do this except for when it's the states doing it. Like, it doesn't make any sense, Alito. All right, so Sotomayor, Kagan, and Jackson concurring in judgment. It is not necessary to decide more to dispose of a case than it is necessary not to decide more. Dobbs v. Jackson. They're citing Dobbs v. Jackson. I love, usually it's Kagan that does this, but Sotomayor is, I guess it's Sotomayor that wrote this because it's, maybe they all wrote it together. I don't know. That fundamental principle of judicial restraint is practically as old as our republic. The court is authorized to say what the law is only because those who apply a rule to particular cases must of necessity expound and interpret that rule. Marbury versus Madison. Say the court departs from that vital principle, deciding not just this case, but challenges that might arise in the future. In this case, the court must decide whether Colorado may keep a presidential candidate off the ballot on the ground that he is an oath-breaking insurrectionist and therefore disqualified from holding federal office under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. Allowing Colorado to do so would, we agree, create a chaotic state-by-state patchwork at odds with our nation's federalism principles. This is enough to resolve the case. Yet the majority goes further. Even though all nine members of the court agree that this independent and sufficient rationale resolves the case, five justices go on. They decide novel constitutional questions to insulate this court and petitioner from future controversy. Although only an individual state's action is at issue here, the majority opines on which federal actors can enforce Section 3 and how they must do so. The majority announces that a disqualification for insurrection can occur only when Congress enacts a particular kind of legislation pursuant to Section 5 of the 14th Amendment. In doing so, the majority shuts the door on other potential means of federal enforcement. We cannot join an opinion that decides momentous and difficult issues unnecessarily. We can only concur in the judgment. Our Constitution leaves some questions to the states while committing others to the federal government. Federalism principles embedded in the constitutional structure decide this case. States cannot use their control over the ballot to undermine the national government. States' restrictions in that case implicate a uniquely important national interest extending beyond a state's own borders. No doubt states have significant authority over presidential electors and in turn presidential elections. That power, however, is limited by other constitutional restraints, including federalism. The majority rests on such principles when it explains why Colorado cannot take the petitioner off the ballot. State-by-state resolution of the question would be quite unlikely to yield a uniform answer to consistency to the basic principle that the president represents all the voters of the nation. That is especially so. But so does the Electoral College. Again, the Electoral College makes it so that the president doesn't represent all of the people of the nation. We have a split nation where many people don't have a say because people in my state of Louisiana will vote for Trump and my vote counts for nothing. The contrary conclusion that a handful of officials in a few states could decide the nation's next president would be especially surprising with respect to Section 3. The Reconstruction Amendments were specifically designed as an expansion of federal power and an intrusion over state sovereignty. Section 3 marked the first time the Constitution placed substantive limits on a state's authority to choose its own officials. Given that context, it would defy logic for Section 3 to give states new powers to determine who may have the presidency. Okay, I can buy that argument. If they would have just said that, I'd be done with it. Fine. But again, Sotomayor and Kagan and Jackson, those justices are intelligent human beings, and Alito is a dumb pile of rocks. To provide the secure, sufficient basis to resolve the case, to allow Colorado to take presidential candidate off the ballot under Section 3 would imperil the framers' vision of a federal government directly responsible to the people. The court should have started and ended its opinion with this conclusion, yet the court continues to resolve questions not before us. That's why it is an activist conservative Supreme Court, because it is taking on more than what was asked of it and is spreading its wings, so to speak, to talk about things that weren't before them. In a case involving no federal action whatsoever, the court opines on how federal enforcement of Section 3 must proceed. Congress, the majority said, must enact legislation under Section 5 prescribing the procedures to ascertain what particular individuals should be disqualified. These musings are inadequately supported as they are gratuitous. Nothing in Section 3's text supports the majority's view of how federal disqualification efforts must operate. Section 3 simply states that no person shall hold certain positions or offices if they are oath-breaking insurrectionists. Nothing in that unequivocal bar suggests that implementing legislation enacted under Section 5 is critical for that matter, or for that matter that the word means in this context. In fact, the text cuts the opposite way. Section 3 provides that when an oath-breaking insurrectionist is disqualified, Congress may, by a vote of two-thirds, remove such a disability. It's hard to understand why the Constitution would require a congressional supermajority to remove a disqualification if a simple majority could nullify Section 3's operation by repealing or declining to pass implementing legislation. Even petitioner's lawyer acknowledged the tension in Section 3 that the majority's view creates. Similarly, nothing else in the rest of the 14th Amendment supports the majority view. Section 5 gives Congress the power to enforce by appropriate legislation. Remedial legislation of any kind, however, is not required. All the Reconstruction Amendments, including the due process and equal protection guarantees and prohibition of slavery, are self-executing, meaning they do not depend on legislation. Similarly, other constitutional rules of disqualification, like the two-term limit of presidency, do not require implementing legislation, nor does the majority suggest otherwise. It simply creates a special rule for the insurrection disability in Section 3. The majority is left with next to no support for its requirement that Section 3 disqualification can occur only pursuant to legislation. It cites Griffin's case, but that is non-precedential. Lower court opinion by a single justice in his capacity as a circuit judge. Once again, even the petitioner's lawyer distanced himself from fully embracing this case as probative of Section 3's meaning. The majority also cites Senator Trumbull's statements that provided no means for enforcing itself. The majority, however, neglects to mention that Senator's view is that the 14th Amendment that prevents a person from holding office with the proposed legislation simply affording more efficient and speedy remedy for effecting disqualification. So basically, they took his words out of context and ignored the rest, not shocked. Ultimately, under the guise of providing a more complete explanation, the majority resolves many unsettled questions of Section 3 and forecloses judicial enforcement of that provision, just as might occur when a party is prosecuted by an insurrectionist and raises the defense that score. The majority further holds that any legislation to enforce this provision must be tailored to Section 3 at 10, ruling out enforcement under federal statutes requiring government to comply with the law. By resolving these and other questions, the majority attempts to insulate all alleged insurrectionists from future challenges to their holding federal offices. What it does today, the court should have left undone. The court, Breyer and Bush v. Gore dissenting, the court today needed to resolve only a single question. The majority resolves much more than that. Section 3 serves its important, though rarely needed, role in our democracy. The American people have the power to vote for and elect candidates for national office. The men who drafted and ratified the 14th Amendment had witnessed an insurrection and rebellion to defend slavery. They wanted to ensure that those who participated in an insurrection and possible future insurrections could not return to prominent roles. Today, the majority goes beyond the necessities of the case to limit how Section 3 can bar an oath-breaking insurrectionist, Trump, from becoming a president. Although we agree that Colorado cannot enforce Section 3, we protest the majority's effort to use this case to define what limits the federal enforcement of provision. Because we would only decide this issue before us, we concur only in the judgment. So there you go. So basically, just to go over that. I mean, that was probably the shortest review of a Supreme Court ruling that we've ever done. But basically, just to go over, just to review, the three lefties on the Supreme Court are right in that they only should have been going over whether or not President Trump could be barred from, or whether or not a state could bar any presidential candidate from running for office as an insurrectionist. That question could have been answered and settled, and I might have agreed with the opinion if they just would have left it at that. But they went on to opine and have opinions about other things that were not at all related to what this case was about. And as they say, potentially what it does is to protect future insurrectionists from from punishment, i.e. from not being able to run for office. They also repeat the line that many experts have said, which is that the amendment in and of itself, all of the post-slavery amendments are, you know, self-implementing, i.e. if you are an insurrectionist, you can't be on the ballot. It's just not up to the states to figure that out. Now, they didn't go on to talk about the weirdness of how the majority, i.e. Alito, as my opinion at least, says that the federal government can only do it unless it's a state election, then the state can do it, even though the federal government is the only one with the authority to do it because of the Section 5 of the 14th Amendment. You know, so they didn't touch that one. I wouldn't want to touch that one with a 10-foot pole either if I was one of them, but because they were trying to stick their comments only to why they didn't want to talk about the rest and why we should only talk about this, that, and the other. We should only talk about the presidential candidates being barred by states who believe that the person running is a insurrectionist. Now, do I agree with it? I might have accepted the argument. That doesn't necessarily mean I would have agreed with it, but I might have accepted the argument because, you know, according to the, let me pull it back, pull this other thing back up real quick. I had it pulled up. Because the 14th Amendment does say, you know, Section 5, Congress shall have the power to enforce by appropriate legislation, the provisions of this article to enforce it. So basically saying, okay, when normally the states would have the power, it grants Congress the power to have the by appropriate legislation, the provisions of this article. So let's flip back to here again. So Section 3, again, no person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or an elector, president, vice president, blah, 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 or as a member of any state legislature, or as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. But Congress may vote by 2/3 of each house to remove such disability. So if they would have just said, because Congress has the ability to enforce this to enforce these powers or these 14th Amendment sections, that therefore they're not powers granted to the states by the 10th Amendment, and as such, only Congress can write legislation to enforce this. They just left it at that and not expounded and expanded their beliefs and expanded their commentary on other issues that were not before the court. I would have been like, all right, fine, I'll accept that argument. Because that's kind of a plain language type deal. But they didn't. They went further. They went further than they needed to. Again, to protect Herr Trump, to protect the insurrectionist in chief. So, and that's what we're stuck with. We are stuck with this activist conservative Supreme Court. Thank you all the people who are all worried about Hillary's emails, but her emails. They didn't want to elect Hillary Clinton. They didn't come out and vote. You know, we lost the right to body autonomy in Dobbs v. Jackson. We lost the control of the Supreme Court. We lost a lot of things under Donald Trump. And now we have whiny people who are risking another Trump presidency. And it's sad that one of the few hopes that we have is that for all the people that are saying that I voted for Biden last time, I'm not voting for Biden this time, you have a bunch of other people who are voting for Nikki Haley who are never going to vote for Trump, who understand the importance of defeating Donald Trump, and who might very well come out and vote for Biden and undo the harm that is caused by those people who, in states that matter, are going to stay home or vote third party or in otherwise take an action that, as I covered in my previous Fat Man rant, punishes Joe Biden. We have an insurrectionist running for office. That wasn't ever undone. The ruling by the Colorado Supreme Court specifically stated and confirmed that Donald Trump is an insurrectionist. And that was not undone by this ruling. This ruling, while it did go on to expound about other things that were not related to this case, it only, for the parts of the Colorado case that was important, it only discussed his ability to be on the ballot. It didn't discuss whether or not he was an insurrectionist or not. So according to the state of Colorado, it was found that he was an insurrectionist, that he participated in an insurrection. And I'll fully agree with the ruling from the state of Colorado. And other states have also formed that opinion as well. So anybody voting for this asshat is voting for an insurrectionist, period. All right, let's go back through the chat and see who... we have 30 concurrent viewers and 24 likes on YouTube. So some people are slacking on their likes. Smash that like button in the patriarchy. Before we go back through the comments in the chat, just a little show reset. Liberal Dan Radio, Talk from the Left, that's right. Mondays and Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Central, on here on liberaldanradio.com, which is the YouTube channel, and on twitch.tv/liberaldanradio. Support the show on YouTube by liking the video, sharing other videos, liking other videos, commenting on videos, responding to other comments on videos, getting those algorithms up, etc. You can support the show by super chats, super stickers, becoming a member, buying other people memberships on Twitch. If you have Amazon, you can subscribe for free using your Amazon Prime membership. You can also follow for free as well. There's not as much other actions that you can do to, I guess, raise those algorithms. As far as I'm aware, just joining in maybe on the Twitch chat may very well help with that as well. Buy Me Cider, liberaldan.com, click the Buy Me Cider button. You can be a Liberal Dan Radio patron for as little as $5 a month as well. Support me month to month or buy me a cider or go to buymeacoffee.com/liberaldanradio for one time, or you can also Venmo me as well at Liberal Dan or Liberal Dan on Venmo. Just think of friends and family because you're not buying anything from me. Let's scrolly back. Cynthia from Texas, we wouldn't be going through this if Congress had done their jobs and impeached him back when. Now, they did impeach him. They didn't convict him on impeachment, but they did impeach him. He was impeached. He was twice impeached. He just wasn't twice convicted. He wasn't once convicted, unfortunately, because the people involved in the Senate were more concerned about supporting their political leader and less concerned about the rule of law. So much for the people who are rule of law people, you know, the Republicans always run on, you know, we're following the rule of law, law and order. We're the law and order party, right? They're supposed to be the law and order party, except for the fact when, you know, they'll support their own criminal president. Cynthia from Texas, maybe it'll be clearer when Jack Smith is done. I say let him run, we'll reject him again. The problem with the Jack Smith thing is the Supreme Court could take for frickin' ever on whether or not he's immune. The fact that they took the case instead of just letting the ruling stand is bizarre. I mean, they wanted to have, again, the Supreme Court likes to hear themselves talk. As we see here, they expounded on more than what was needed to be able to settle this case. So they want to hear themselves talk. We have to wait for a month and a half now in order to be able to understand, or in order to be able to hear the what goes on in that hearing. And then we'll have to wait for however long it takes for them to actually make the ruling. Then maybe they'll be quick. I doubt it, because it seems like they're just wanting to protect Donald Trump. At least the majority does. So let's see. Bicycle Mike, I deleted my YouTube channel today because of maggot brains. Why is that? Were there people harassing you or something, or what? Yeah, TV2 Live, if we didn't have the questionable Electoral College, Trump wouldn't have never won in 2016. I mean, Republicans wouldn't have won the last nine of... Republicans haven't won the majority in, like, nine of the last 10 presidential elections. If we actually use the popular vote, we'd have Democratic presidents for most of the time. So let's see. Boo, 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 boo. John McClure, any angry women and the men who love them, and not, I would throw in, and folks who are non-binary and gender non-conforming as well, elect Democratic senators, let's hope. Bicycle Mike, women who vote red are very confused. Well, one of the things I said to one of my aunts who posted about this, who was confused about the women who vote for Republicans, they don't think it can happen to them. Like, it'll happen to them, or if it does happen to them, they think they'll find some excuse or way around it. Like, they'll go leave, they feel like maybe they can go leave the state. Like, if they ever had to get an abortion for whatever reason, they'll go leave the state. If they're in a state that's, you know, anti-choice. They don't think the rules apply to them. They just want to push the rules on other people. It's like the people who go to abortion clinics and protest and then end up getting pregnant, or like, oops, I guess I need an abortion now. And then go to the same abortion clinic and get the abortion and then go back out there and protest abortion the next day, because, or whenever they can, because, you know, hypocrisy is a conservative prerequisite. Humans with a brain network should be angry at a loss of rights. Well, yeah. Jeff Curry, what party is always harping about states' rights? Well, it's the Republican Party, of course, at least recently. Used to be, you know, it's always conservatives who argue about the myth of states' rights. Stephen, this is really interesting. Do we really have to ask what an insurrection is? Is Trump guilty of that? Do we uphold the Constitution? I mean, we're not upholding the Constitution against any of the people who are insurrectionists, who are wanting to be electors, who are wanting to be... if you want to be an elector, if you want to run to be Donald Trump's elector and you were an insurrectionist, it now takes Congress to prevent that from happening. And do we think that this Republican-controlled House is going to say that these electors can't be voted, these people can't be voted as electors? No. So there are people who are plainly insurrectionists who are going to be running to be electors for these particular people, and they're not going to be stopped from doing so because of this court ruling. Biden should test presidential immunity and throw Donnie diapers in jail. Well, or JSIL, did you mean jail, I guess? According to Donald Trump's total immunity argument, Biden could do whatever he wants to Trump, and that would be the end of it. And he could do whatever he wants, because that's who he is. That's what Trump's argument is. That's the legal doctrine that Donald Trump subscribes to, total and complete immunity. which is stupid, because if the founders believed that the president would should have total and complete immunity for anything that they do, there would be no reason for impeachment. If you're supposed to have immunity for everything you do, then why have an impeachment clause? Why have the ability to impeach? If there's no, if nothing the president could do is wrong, then why, then you can't impeach, right? But obviously, the president can do wrong, so then that's why we have impeachments, to remove the president from office. It's bizarre. It's bizarre logic, bizarre arguments. Kalahala, or if certain people hadn't thrown away their vote in protest. Yep. Chris, absolutely. Let him be in the albatross around the next. We know what we have to do. We got to blow up the hill so President Pops can finish the job with nothing but green lights. Absolutely. That's why I'm always arguing that we need to move Congress left. We need to push Congress to the left. We need to elect, you know, centrists where there are moderate Republicans. We need to allow moderate Democrats in place of centrists. We need to elect Democrats in the place of moderate Democrats. We need to elect more progressive people in the place of entrenched Democrats, where they went in, say, blue ditch. Everything needs to move to the left, and that will make this country much better. And defeat Project 2025 in November 2024. Yep. Thing is that, like, there was one video, and I know some people don't like TikTok for her, but there was a video for TikTok that was like it's this woman in, like, a snow outfit or whatever. She's like, I'm a liberal, and I do this, and I do that, and just making all sorts of stuff about. And I keep meaning to go back and respond to the video again, because I made a response video to it for just mocking the whiny leftists of it and you know, how they're ridiculous. But one of the things I want to go back is the person made the argument, I'm a liberal, and I'm going to argue about Project 2025, even though it's been around for 25 years, and nobody has done anything about it yet. Like, hello, excuse me, people have on the right were arguing about overturning Roe v. Wade for longer than that, and they eventually got their way because of complacency and whiny leftists who didn't like that Bernie ran a bad campaign and flipped to Trump instead in the general election. That's why we're stuck with Dobbs v. Jackson. That's why we were stuck for 4 years with Orange Julius. That's why we were stuck with a president who didn't understand science, and why hundreds of thousands of people needlessly died during the COVID pandemic. So yeah. It doesn't matter that Project 2025 has been in around forever and hasn't come close to happening yet, because it could, if given the right circumstances, and the right circumstances are right around the corner with voter complacency. See, how are honorary loser from Hoosier Land, Jolie has, wait, what? Honorary Hoosier, Hoser from Hoosier Land? I'm confused. Is it, Nick Rich, is it just you, or is my volume a bit low? No, it seems, oh, there you go. It dropped down again. I have my mixer open so I can check clearly, because for some reason, my computer likes to change volume settings on me randomly all of a sudden. I don't understand why it does that. It's very bizarre, but it will do it. So yeah, just let me know when the volume gets low and it'll suck, and I'll fix it. Trump should get fined $5 million for every time-wasting frivolous duty files. He would be broke in 15 seconds. Big Hook, is Dan going on about the flip-pop heads? The heads I win, tails you lose practice of the Republican Supreme Court? Pretty much, I was. How is Trump going to get out of all these fines? I have a feeling he will. I mean, I guess he's trying to fight it and appeal it until he becomes president, and then he's going to say, well, you know, come at me as president. Expand the court to 13, then Biden picks four. Yeah, but you have to argue that you have to start with expanding the court to 15 and then negotiate down 13. GOP, Guardians of Putin. Nice. It should be national popular vote wins and sets up Electoral College for Senate votes. I mean, Electoral College just needs to go away. So, and the Senate needs to be changed too. Because the founding fathers, when they created the Senate, and I think Rhode Island was the smallest populous state, and Virginia was the largest populous state. And after you do the math for 3/5 of a person, Rhode Island was 11th the size of Virginia. So Virginia was 11 times the size of Rhode Island. Nowadays, you have California, which is like 55 times the size of Wyoming. And so the Wyoming Senate candidates have at least five times more say. Actually, that's not even true. I think California is that's just looking at the House. I think California is like 68 times as large as Wyoming. It's just that. It's either 68 or 69 times the size of Wyoming, but they only have 55 times more people in the House of Representatives because we've stupidly stuck at 435 instead of taking how many Wyoming's worth of people each state has, because Wyoming's the smallest populous state, and then deciding, okay, well, this is how many congressional representatives each state should have. If you did that, you'd have at least 100 more seats in the House, and then so you would have like 535 seats in the House, and the Electoral College would be 635 instead of 535, and California would have like 69 Electoral College votes, or maybe 71 Electoral College votes with 69 House of Representative seats instead of 55. Because California is currently way underrepresented in the House, comparing its population to the population of Wyoming, which, you know, shows the flaw in the founders' argument, or in the argument that we should follow what the founders did, because the founders created an imperfect system. But part of it is that we have this system that is just, for some reason, we're sticking at 435 instead of looking at the number of actual people that exist in the smallest state and working from there. So Andy Kumi Barrett can kiss my grit. She has zero business being there. That's true. She should have never been put up there. Was this ruling a trade-off for votes in the immunity ruling? I don't know. I don't know if it was a trade-off for votes in the immunity ruling. We will see what happens with the immunity ruling. But I don't think the Democrats expected there to be a case altogether. They should have just not taken the case. And Trump would have been said, oh, it would have been then stated, okay, Trump doesn't have immunity. Let's go on with the case. With no peaceful transition to power, he should be disqualified. Yep, I mean, he should be, but he's not. Let's see. Blah, 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 blah. SCOTUS needs the assumption of impartiality. Hasn't been seen in decades. That's unfortunately true. Which is, you know, part of the problem with it. The only problem with Biden should expand the court to 13 would be you then have to make sure that the Republicans never get control of the House and Senate again, but and the presidency, because if they do, they're going to just expand the court to 15, or they'll knock the seats back down and do horrible things. So Cynthia from Texas, the violations of classified documents, he shouldn't be able to get cleared for national security clearance, of course, but that case is going to take even longer to go, which is even more bizarre. Chris, he wouldn't even be able to pass a basic civics exam. He wouldn't be able to even pass any exam. I mean, I guarantee you, if you made him study for an exam, he'd fail probably every one he took. I'm surprised he passed person, woman, man, camera, TV. So the RNC should have shut his campaign down. See, the problem is that you have too many MAGAs. Too many people who are supporters of Donald Trump who are more than happy to just go down fighting with him, and they'll just leave the party. If the Republican Party said no to Trump, Trump would just say, okay, well, I'm taking my voters and I'm going with me and I'm making my own party, and the Republican Party would never win again. The Republican Party would go away, and then you'd have the Magoo Party, which would basically take over. In their state, who pays for the election? Colorado pays for all of the elections in Colorado. I wish the CIA would say how many foreign assets we lost because of him. Probably a good bit. They should. They won't, but they should. See, Wes, they can go back to court about the money it costs for Trump to put on the ballot, maybe. Cynthia, don't ever apologize for being opinionated. That's why we love you. CIA had a lot of people compromised and killed under the Trump reign. Coincidence, I think not. He didn't trust the intelligence apparatus, and they feared he would expose all agents, including that one. And there's the fact that there are now intelligence people who are basically coming out and saying, look, we are screwed if you let Donald Trump become president again, because he will revamp the entirety of the intelligence community, and our intelligence networks will go to shit if we have Donald Trump as president again. So our intelligence people are saying, look, it would be not intelligent for us to pick Donald Trump as president again. And the people aren't going to listen to him because, you know, the people are ridiculous. One of the other things, I was looking back at my Facebook memories, and one of the things I noticed was that the Republicans in my personal Facebook memories were very, very upset that Barack Obama didn't take a stronger stance against Vladimir Putin when he first invaded Crimea. They were so mad that Obama didn't take a stance against Putin when he invaded Crimea. But now they have no problem with Putin. They love Putin. Putin's their second hero because Putin is Trump's hero. So because Trump loves Putin, they now magically love Putin too. It's ridiculous. Yeah, Aaron Butter emails. Thank you, Stephen, for the super chat, for the super sticker. Appreciate you. I scrolled a little too far, though. Why did Ford pardon Nixon, asked Chris. Probably because he didn't want he didn't want the nation to go crazy or whatever. They wanted just to have it be the end of it. He thought that there might have been more problems to the nation by doing a pardon. So let's see, what's the difference in being convicted or accused of insurrection? Well, ask Chad. Well, I mean, convicted, you don't have to be. According to many legal theories, you don't have to be convicted of a crime of insurrection if you've committed an act of insurrectionism in order to be left off the ballot. Now, one might argue that if what they should have done, if you wanted to reword the whole thing differently and or better, it would have been if you wanted to be clearer about that, maybe they should have worded that anybody convicted of being an insurrectionist would not be able to serve in government. But that would then require you bringing everybody up on charges. And so it's, and when back then, you know, and probably now too, you knew who were insurrectionists and who weren't, because they basically told you. There was records of, okay, this is the person that took up arms against this country, or who supported the people who took up arms against this country. So therefore, if you did that, you can't be a politician anymore in this country. Done. Unless Congress decides to say, okay, you're forgiven. So. So that's why a lot of the experts are saying that the prohibition on being an insurrectionist running for office was self-enacting. It doesn't need any action from Congress. You're an insurrectionist. You're an insurrectionist. There you go. No ifs, ands, or buts. I don't see a lot of people complaining about the sound. Unfortunately, I just checked my sound again, and oh, it keeps popping down off 100. I don't know why it keeps doing that. So weird. So bizarre. I don't know why it does that, but it's doing it. But even then, it's like not, let's see. It's still going all the way up to the top, so I don't know. But see, now it's coming back down again. It's so weird. I don't know what is wrong with my computer. I just need a new one, but I can't afford a new one right now. So, remember, Benedict Donald is about to go on trial for his 2016 election interference, but that's in New York, and we'll see what happens. See, lots of Americans want politics which are to the left of where they are now. The GOP did evolve. Nixon signed the EPA, but no Republicans would do that today. Many simply won't change teams. Trump was almost in tears today in a live speech rant. I would love to see him cry, because I've never seen Donald Trump. I don't think Donald Trump has ever cried once. He'll probably cry if he once he has to write that damn check. Like, the ink will probably be smudged. The ink will be smudged by all the tears that he writes. I'm sure if his kids die, if Donald Trump's kids were for some reason to die, he wouldn't cry. I don't think that he would. I don't think he's capable of any sort of emotion. So. Jeff, what is this Wyoming you speak of? I don't know. Some magical place that has way too much power than it should in Congress. TV2 Live, we have a serious problem in our country, and Trump is just... I don't think Trump is just a symptom. Trump is a symptom, but he's also a catalyst. He's a cause of it as well. He causes the problems. Why does this keep moving? I'm going to have to find that out after the show. I don't know. He causes the problems, and he's a symptom of the problem as well. So he took advantage of the problems that existed specifically to better himself. See, to fix Supreme Court, change the Senate, GOP senators up in North Dakota, Nebraska, Wyoming, Utah, Texas, Missouri, Mississippi, Indiana, Tennessee, Florida. Do you have contacts? See, I don't know. I don't know how many of the states are winnable. Texas, maybe. Because I think there's a Cruz that's up now, maybe. I don't think Utah is touchable. I don't think Wyoming's touchable. I don't think Nebraska's touchable. I don't think North Dakota's touchable. How many of those are really actually touchable? Missouri used to be a swing state. It's no longer. Mississippi, probably not. Florida used to be touchable. Now it's not. Tennessee, I don't know if any of those states are touchable. Oh, Chris, that was a comment when you were talking about the immunity issue. If presidents are immune, why would Ford have to pardon Nixon? Good point. That's a good point. There would be no reason to, because if they're immune, no need to pardon them. Another excellent point by one of the listeners. Trump is slowly realizing his fate. He lost a primary. He's effing up every public appearance with brain spasms. Today he looked and sounded emotional, almost begging for someone to say everything okay. Buy Dan a computer, guys. Yeah, I'd love that. Took a while for things to how to get enough money to get a computer, too. So, Nerd Misha, only if Ivanka died, maybe. Yeah, I would say if Ivanka Trump died, maybe he might shed a tear. Maybe. I don't know. Let's see if that's Chris. If I lean into the mic, does it go down? All right. So I'm leaning back, and it's at 100. I lean forward, and I'm wow, there you go. Hey, Chris doing tech support over here. Look at that. If I get too loud, the computer automatically reduces the input. Weird. Stop it. I should find that setting and tell it to stop it, because it should stop it. I guess I could always increase this volume too and put me at 100% on OBS, and maybe that'll offset it. Hitler was just a short, angry guy without his supporters. Well, Trump will be a tall, angry guy without his supporters as well, but unfortunately he has a ton of supporters, and they're not going anywhere. As we covered on the last show, we watched the part of the Jimmy Kimmel show where it was like, where he basically showed off that, hey, look, here's Trump supporters saying things about Joe Biden because they think Joe Biden says it, and they say mean comments about Biden because they think it's Biden that said it, and then all of a sudden, oh, no, I'm sorry. It was really Donald Trump that said it, and then they make excuses for Trump because that's what they do. So... states are touchable. A Senate vote is tied to Supreme Court change. Must make this linkage, angry women. Well, that's the thing. Like, if you can make it purely about abortion, like we saw Kansas came out and voted for to enshrine abortion or to maintain abortion as a right in their constitution. Shockingly enough, because enough people were like, no, we don't like this. But can you do that for Biden? Can you do that for a Democratic senator? Because most of the people, like, because you have this issue where it's like 80% of the people don't like the ruling. 80% of the people support choice in abortion at some point. But are they that supportive of choice at that point to come out and just vote for a Democrat to say enough is enough? I don't think so. I wish I was wrong. I wish I was wrong about that opinion, and maybe I am wrong about that opinion, but I don't think that's the case in a lot of these hard states where they'll come out and they'll defend their own abortion rights, but they won't come out and vote for Biden. They won't come out and vote for a Democratic candidate because they have all of these other issues that they're conservative on, and they're not willing to make that sacrifice for their own personal body autonomy, even though body autonomy should be one of the top things that anybody worries about. Jeff, Ivanka dies, Trump at least loses a hard eye. I was thinking it, but Jeff said it. See, if Jack Smith charged people with insurrection, shouldn't he have also charged Trump? I don't know why Jack Smith or why they didn't charge Trump with being an insurrectionist. I don't know why that wasn't specifically the case. You'd have to talk to Jack Smith in that one. It's one of the things that does boggle my mind, because to me, he did. But sometimes maybe he was trying to avoid the overcharging thing, where sometimes prosecutors will overcharge to make a career case and then they fail because they overcharged. So maybe he wanted to keep it the things that he knew he could win on. which doesn't mean he didn't commit an insurrection. It just means that they knew that the on these charges, he felt that he could have a better chance of winning. To be clear, Trump is the spokesperson for the movement, but more is being done by the billionaires and fascists like Stephen Miller and Bannon to envision a Mussolini to Putin's Hitler presence, then NATO falls. Well, that is one of the big dangers. That's one of the things I've said in my fat man rant about the Michigan Democrats who are jumping the shark. It's that they, you know, yes, it's perfectly legitimate and okay to be worried about the lives of Palestinian people and to be a little bit upset about what's going on and maybe that Biden is not taking such a strong stance on Israel. Although, as I tweeted out today on Shitter or whatever, it was reported yesterday that Israel agreed in principle to a 6-week ceasefire for only 40 hostages, and Hamas hasn't said a peep. Hamas has not committed to also having a 6-week ceasefire because Hamas doesn't give a crap about Palestinians. Hamas only cares about Hamas and are more than happy to see more Palestinians die to further their own goal of going after Jewish people. So, but yeah, but those people who are complaining in Michigan and any other place about the lives that are being lost in who are Palestinians, you have every right to be angry about that. But just understand that if Trump takes over, more lives are going to be lost. You're going to see dead Ukrainians. You're going to see potentially other dead members of NATO. If another outbreak takes place, you're going to see other dead Americans because Donald Trump's not going to even follow through with what he did last time. And even what he did last time wasn't enough. So more people will die under a Trump presidency than would under a Biden presidency. But they don't care about that because they have a very myopic view of the entire situation. So, Trump would argue the double jeopardy Senate acquittal issue. Well, I mean, that's one of the other stupid things, though, is that they argue that Trump's immune, and they argue that Trump can't be brought up on charges because he wasn't impeached. He wasn't convicted of the articles of impeachment. But yet he says that if he was, but then he says because he wasn't convicted of the articles of impeachment that he has double jeopardy immunity as well. But if you have double jeopardy immunity because of losing the impeachment or winning the impeachment trial, I guess, or being acquitted on the impeachment charges because he wasn't convicted, you then would have double jeopardy in the other case as well. If they actually convicted you of the articles of impeachment, double jeopardy would then have to also apply, but it wouldn't under their stupid arguments because, again, they're just throwing spaghetti at the wall and hoping that it sticks. Tim Farrell, I'm not sure I believe there are any hostages alive. And maybe that's the case. Maybe that's one of the reasons why Hamas won't commit to it. Because maybe Hamas is like, we know there are no hostages left and we're not gonna agree to this because then we have to come up with 40 bodies that we can't come up with. Maybe. Who knows? Only time will tell. Only Hamas can really tell you whether or not they still have hostages or not. And are they going to tell you? Probably not, because they are better suited. Just like Netanyahu felt that he was better off by reacting to an attack than stopping it from happening, Hamas feels that they're better off responding to Netanyahu's attacks than they are to, you know, saying, okay, well, we'll do peace for 6 weeks. Even though it would mean more aid for the Palestinian people, more food for the Palestinian people, more medical help for the Palestinian people. But again, Hamas doesn't give a crap about the Palestinian people. They just want to kill Jews. So that's that. Anyway, so because I'm still fighting the cough, I'm better. I think I am better this week than I was last week. I think that much is obvious, but I still have the cough. So what I think I am going to do is I will go ahead and call this week's episode over just to make sure I rest the voice and make sure I don't push myself too much as we're getting back into the swing of things, just to make sure my voice isn't doesn't continue to get worse and that I don't start getting any more coughing fits or what have you. Since we did cover both of the topics that I wanted to cover today, I do have some work to do on uploading the review of the Supreme Court ruling separately on a separate video as well. So I'll do that after the show too. Anyway, this is the end. We're taking it out of your pay. LOL. This is the end of today's episode of Liberal Dan Radio. Talk from the left, that's right. I will be on live tomorrow. Probably not till 8 p.m. on Tuesday at Twitch. NerdyDan.com on Twitch to do the gaming stuff. And then Wednesday, regular 8 p.m. Central, we'll be talking about the results of Super Tuesday and see what's going on from there as well. And if we have any other news or whatever, we'll talk about that as well. So till the next time I see you, this is Dan Zimmerman with Liberal Dan Radio. Talk from the left. That's right.